Hi, everyone. It is Dr. Sarah Gottfried. You can find me at sarahgottfriedmd.com. I help women and men balance their hormones naturally regardless of age. And I'm so excited to be on the line today with Dr. Patrick Hanaway. We are talking about how to connect to food, friends, family, and the microflora. We've got a super fun conversation for you today. Let me start first by introducing Dr. Hanaway, and we will get into our conversation. I was honored to meet Dr. Hanaway last year at an event where we were both speaking. Dr. Patrick Hanaway is a board-certified family physician with his medical degree from Washington University and residency training at the University of New Mexico. He is the past president of the American Board of Integrative Holistic Medicine and co-founder of Family to Family, your home for whole health care, with his wife in Asheville, North Carolina. He's been initiated as a shaman in the Sierra Madres of Central Mexico. We're going to be talking about that today because that's part of how he's come to incorporating healing approaches to his clinical practice. A little bit of his street credibility, I want to just say a couple more things about that. Patrick was the chief medical officer at Genova Diagnostics from 2002 to 2012. He's currently the director of medical education for the Institute for Functional Medicine, and he teaches around the world on good medicine. We're going to explain what that is today. And Dr. Hanaway brings his energy to teaching clinicians about nutrition, digestion, healing, all with an emphasis on therapeutic relationships, connection, community, and wholeness. So I'm super excited to introduce you to Dr. Patrick Hanaway. Hi, Dr. Hanaway. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Hi, Sarah. Thank you so much. And it's Patrick. Call me Patrick like my mama does. I'm really excited to be on your show and be able to talk to, you know, all of these people about about connecting to nature and life through our food and how that has an impact on our body, including the microbes that live inside us.
Well, this is a real hot topic right now. You know, I think many folks have just read the article that was in the New York Times Magazine by Michael Pollan, "Some of My Best Friends Are Bacteria." And I just want to start first, Patrick, by saying, you're not the usual family practice doctor. You're the head of medical education at the Institute for Functional Medicine. You're a shaman. What made you go rogue?
Well, I don't think it's rogue. I think it's actually what being a doctor is. So, you know, doctor comes from the Latin docere, to teach. And when I was in medical school, I was interested in learning about food and nutrition, and that meant the food I put in my mouth. And as I got more and more into looking around for opportunities to learn in medical school, because I felt that's what healing was about, I kept being exposed to more things, to acupuncture and chiropractic and, you know, nutritional therapeutics and guided imagery. And each of these things felt like these are all part of what healing and being a doctor is. So I had great support to be able to just continue exploring that. And, you know, as you did, and I went through my residency and spent, we actually nearly crossed paths on the Bering Sea, apparently, of learning the benefits of acute care medicine and hospital medicine. And it's of great value. But for complex chronic disease, it doesn't really help. And so what are the tools that are going to help with that? And I've just continued to explore and wonder and be curious and be a scientist. And I don't think that's being rogue. I think that's just being a good doctor.
Well, I love that you're sort of turning the language back on me, because I think you're right that I don't want to be alternative. I don't want this to feel like an alternative path, these things that you and I do. And I want to maybe explain a little bit about what you mean by this not being rogue, because I think for some folks who are listening to us who maybe know a little bit about functional medicine or a little bit about Chinese medicine or Ayurveda or Tibetan medicine, they have a sense that you're talking about, you know, sort of this ancient wisdom tradition and how it informs the way that you and I practice medicine. But I'm just wondering if you could take that on for a moment and just explain a little bit about functional medicine. And this is not necessarily a new thing, right? I mean, you've studied these other practices as well. And I love this point that you've made to me in the past, which is, you know, we're applying some old ideas to the way that we take care of people in the modern age. Can you maybe say a little more about that?
Yeah, I mean, I could talk about that for a long time, so I'll try to I'll try to keep my comments, you know, pithy and direct. But I want to start off with a story, because when I began to learn traditional Chinese medicine and I got to work with an acupuncturist, or spend some time with an acupuncturist, Michael Brofman, at the Pine Street Clinic up in San Anselmo, California, they had a pressure sensory electrodes that would help you to see a waveform of the pulse from a TCM perspective. And this is 1988, so this is, you know, before a lot of this stuff, 25 years ago. And I talked with them about the relationship between that and Ayurvedic pulse taking. And he said, well, they don't correlate. And to me, it's like, it's the same pulse. Why don't they correlate? And we begin to recognize that, oh, the intention and the way in which I'm looking at you from will have a difference in how I see you. So if I'm taking your pulse from a TCM perspective or from an Ayurvedic perspective, they're not actually the same pulse. There's different information that's disseminated. And that's, you know, oh, that's quantum physics. That's Heisenberg's uncertainty principle. So then you begin to see, oh, okay, these things don't all stack together, but they relate together because there's fundamental principles that are working in concert with each other. So while we may look at more ancient forms of medicine, looking at, you know, Vata, Pitta, and Kapha, or looking at the five elements of earth, of fire, earth, metal, water, and wood as being quaintly archaic, they're describing fundamental energetic processes that are going on in the world. So within the West, as we look to science and we look to what's happening with what we're doing, we can begin to see, oh my goodness, these patterns emerge again. And within functional medicine, that's tried to take a lens of, say, let's not look at disease, let's not look at the final common outcome of what's going on, because depression, for example, there can be many reasons why there's depression going on. There can be excesses of inflammation. There can be an inadequate of earth connection and nutrition and assimilation from the environment. There can be grief from many things that have happened. There can be issues with communication and flow of neurotransmitters that are going on. There can be structural issues, including things like concussions that we're seeing from, you know, football and soccer players that can lead to. So depression isn't one thing. It's many different things. How do we begin to look at the systems and how they relate to each other? And the thing that I'm fascinated by is, and how do we take that back to be able to learn from, you know, say TCM, where, you know, they've helped 1 billion people for 3,000 years, or to Ayurveda, where they've helped, you know, 1 billion plus people for 5,000 years. Maybe we can learn something, because science has its roots in empiric observation of what's going on, not only in randomized, double-blind, controlled clinical trials. So it's, to me, it's scientific to grab, to look at, well, what's worked for people in the world for thousands of years, instead of saying, well, we have a randomized controlled trial of, you know, 211, you know, women aged 50 to 60 over a 22-month period of time. Like, that's ridiculous that we think that's the limitations of science. Sorry, you got me going. But to me, the interrelationships are just looking at the patterns. And where we see those patterns is in our connection to nature. And that relates back to the piece of talking about, if you will, shamanism, because that really is about connecting to nature and listening to all of the energies that are around us all the time.
Mm. Well, I'm so glad that you brought up shamanism, and there's so much richness just in what you just described, and I love that you know, we probably almost crossed paths when you were at the Pine Street Clinic. I think it's amazing how many things that we've done along the same lines, so I really appreciate that about you. I also love how you walked us through the functional medicine matrix and how it applies to a problem like depression. You know, worldwide, we've got so many people who struggle with depression. It's one of the most disabling problems that people face. And I think sometimes people start to have their eyes glaze over when you talk about a problem like depression. So I really appreciate how you are talking about it in a different way. I want to maybe talk about shamanism for a moment and then get into some of the specifics about the microbiome, why we should care about it, what do we do. But before we get to that, could we hear a bit about shamanism and the role that that's played in your life?
Well, you know, there's an extension of work of working with, you know, Marty Rossman and imagery back in medical school of opening my mind and then studying meditation and working with Tibetan refugees and, you know, deepening that kind of personal practice. And as I did that, there was something that was very soothing, but there was also something where it felt like it was mental for me. And while the Eastern traditions, you know, talk about opening the heart, for me, it was more mental. And I became exposed to some teachers talking about both shamanic journeying to plants, learning to connect with the spirits of plants and natures. And then I began to have, you know, some dreams. And as I say at times, I told those dreams to the wrong person. I told those dreams. I told those dreams to a person who, you know, was very skilled in understanding dreams and invited, encouraged me to go on a vision quest where I had an opportunity and sort of recognized, oh, the path of healing, you know, I'd already been doing all the integrative functional good medicine kind of stuff, but the path of healing for me had to do with really connecting to nature and the forces that are present around us all the time. And I was given that opportunity to be able to work with the Huichol people and their traditions in the Sierra Madres in Mexico, and I've done that for the last 10 years. And that has meant that I spend time working with both ceremony and ritual, but I also work with patients one-on-one with the skills that I've learned and, you know, sitting around the fire. And what that means is that when patients come and see me, you know, that sometimes they tell me a story and it's like, oh, that's easy. That sounds like it's, you know, digestive enzymes and gut flora, and we can help you here and fix your leaky gut and go on from there. And there's other times where they tell the story and, you know, you recognize that there's a depth of something that we might call a spiritual issue that's going on in their lives that needs more support than, you know, nutrients and hormones and compassionate listening are able to do. They need some help at a deeper level. And so I have the opportunity to offer that. And if they still need help, I have others who are my teachers who I can refer them to as well for deeper healing work.
Well, this is very powerful, and I think this is certainly a piece that is missing quite desperately from the conventional medicine that most folks are used to. And I want to talk kind of on both sides of the spectrum here about how this shows up in your practice, and also a little bit about the gut. I mean, you're quite famous for knowing so much about the microbiome and making the gut and the inhabitants of the gut really come alive. So I'm hoping you can help us understand why should we care about this, and maybe just as you just were telling us about, how is it that these other determinants of health, things like spiritual issues, come up, and how are they different from figuring out the other example that you gave of, I think this person needs digestive enzymes or they need to heal a leaky gut. So can you maybe start with the microbiome? Why do we need to pay attention to this? Give us the why.
Well, the why is, I think, becoming more well-known right now. You know, we see it in the New York Times regularly. We saw it on the cover of The Economist, you know, this past summer. So people are becoming more aware of the fact that when we're born, we are totally human and there are no bacteria that are inside us. But as soon as we move down through the vaginal canal or through the skin in a C-section and begin to breathe and eat food, we begin to introduce bacteria into our beings, into our mouth and all of our orifices. But in our gut, we've got 10 trillion cells in our body, and we've got 100 to 150 trillion bacteria. So less than 10% of all the cells in our body are human, and they have an impact on what's going on. So the ability to help us to be able to absorb nutrients, to be able to educate our immune system early on, to give the fuels that are necessary for the cells that line the large intestine to help us with vitamin absorption as well. Those are all fundamentally important processes. You know, immunologically and as defense, they act as a means of helping to protect us. You know, in Chinese medicine, the two sword or separates the wheat from the chaff. And yet now we see that because of imbalances in gut flora, it has an important part to do with the increases in celiac disease and the increases in gluten sensitivity. And that's where, you know, I sort of can jump to our imbalanced relationship with the world and the environment is playing itself inside our gut, inside the microbiome that's present there. And so when we have a right relationship with our environment and we eat foods that express diversity of all that we are given, that manifests itself as diversity within our gut microflora and helps us to be in balance in our life. And so I like the fact that you talk about the two ends of the spectrum, because it is a spectrum and it all relates to each other. It's not separate. So then when we look to find out what's going on with an individual in terms of their digestive capacity, what we find from ancient texts like the Vedic Shrushuta Samhita written in the 6th century before the current era, we find that the emphasis is actually on digestion and elimination. And that indicates ideal health. So these pieces are related, and we've learned from these traditions and from our naturopathic colleagues. And in practice, I've just learned that when I focus on helping support the gut and helping have diversity in the diet, those two things are the biggest factors for helping someone to begin to move towards health and wellness. And of course there are people who need more help and support than that. You know, so that's the beginning of the process. It's not the end.
So true. I mean, I'm right there with you in terms of studying Ayurveda and looking at some of these ancient traditions that are available to us. And I love that you brought up Ayurveda and that concept of how we need to digest the nutrients of our lives. And we also need to regularly remove the metabolic, energetic, psychological, and spiritual waste and toxins. I really appreciate how you brought that into the conversation. You also raised the point that it's the imbalances in our modern lives that lead to problems, that are the root of disease. And I'm wondering if we could dive a little deeper, get a little more granular about that, because I imagine many of our listeners, as you were describing imbalances, were nodding their heads and saying, oh my gosh, okay, what do I do? So how do you start to approach these imbalances that we have in the way that we live our lives and how they show up day to day?
Yeah, well, and that's where, you know, you and I have a role as doctors, because it's where the rubber hits the road. And so people come in because they have imbalances, they have pain and suffering, they're not feeling imbalance, and these manifest themselves as symptoms. In Western medicine, we tend to lump and call these symptoms diseases, and then we work with our medicines to try to make the symptoms go away. Now, within Ayurveda, we see that there are levels of imbalance that are occurring, and that they manifest themselves in the pulse and in the tongue and in the behaviors, and then they begin to manifest themselves as symptoms. And finally, when they have a disease, that's actually the fifth of six levels of imbalance that's going on. And so as doctors, we often don't see people until they're at that point of disease. But what it's reflecting are underlying imbalances. So when we look to listen to the story of what's gone on in a person's life from the time they were conceived through birth and their early years, and looking at how the pieces of their life story fit together, we listen to the narrative of them. That helps to begin to give clues of where there are imbalances that are going on. So we can take an example to make it tangible, you know, in looking at the gut, where we have someone who comes in, you know, who's a yoga practitioner, is vegetarian, but they've got you know, gas and bloating, and they feel bad, and that's led to more changes emotionally in depression and anxiety that emerge. And classically, we would be taught to reach for an anxiolytic or an antidepressant to help the person. And in the way in which I approach that, I say, well, let's look at what's going on with your gut. Let's look at, is your digestive capacity, the Agni, if you will, in Ayurveda, the digestive fire, is it working properly? And we can look at that physiologically by saying, you know, what's going on with the acid in your stomach? And is your pancreatic function being stimulated to work properly? Because we see that almost a third of the time, it's not. And what's going on? Is there any inflammation in the gut, or permeability, leakiness in the gut membranes? Because that's going to lead to a stimulation of inflammation in the body, and the presence of the immune system reacting to undigested food particles that are present there. And let's also look at what's going on with the gut microflora. And is it balanced, and is it diverse, or is it imbalanced? And so in that simple way, digestion, inflammation, gut microflora, DIG, I teach people, I say, well, this is what we're going to do. And how do we begin to bring these factors back into balance? And as we do that, you know, let's remove the things like wheat and casein that tend to be problems for people in the Western diet. See how you begin to feel with that. And you can add them back and see, did it make a difference, or did it not make a difference? And so we are experimenting with both diet and the gut to be able to help give it support, rather than focusing on the symptoms of maybe anxiety and depression that are also there. We're trying to treat the root of imbalance that's going on. Now, I've given you sort of a specific example, and if that person had other issues going on, I might have needed to look in other places in terms of energy production or hormones or neurotransmitters, but that's how I think about it. And so I just moved through it in a pretty, almost a simplistic way of, let's get to the root cause first, help to bring balance back to the system there. If I need to use medicines, symptoms in the meantime, I will, but that's not the main emphasis.
Gotcha. So I think this is really helpful for our listeners to understand the process that you use to look at the root cause. And I think it's so interesting, Patrick, because we've gotten several questions from our listeners, and one question that came in speaks to what you've just described. This is a woman from London who says, there's so much conflicting information out there on gut health. Do we rely on food alone, and if so, which foods? Yogurt, yes or no, fermented or not? Probiotics, which ones, how much? Should we regularly take the antimicrobials, the coconut, the oregano oil? So I think this particular question, actually there's maybe about five questions there, speaks to the confusion that people have about addressing the imbalances that are in the gut and are a root cause of, you know, why they feel crummy or why they have gas or bloating or why they're depressed or anxious. So how would you go about answering that? I mean, I imagine if someone came to you in your practice, you have a process that you use to answer some of these questions, and there's not really a one-size-fits-all answer when it comes to yogurt, yes or no.
It depends on where the person is within the how much reserve they have and the continuum from wellness to illness and then back. Because if they're more ill, they've got autoimmune disease, they've been hospitalized, you know, C. diff that's non-responsive, we tend to be more aggressive in our approach. With someone who comes in who's got irritable bowel syndrome and some other symptoms of reflux, we're going to tend to be more conservative in our approach that emphasizes food first, quality foods first, diverse foods first. So when we talk about the gut flora, what we've learned is we used to believe that what your makeup of your gut flora is over the first couple of years of life becomes your basic gut flora for the remainder of your life. Now, the fact is, if you keep eating the same foods, that's true. But if you change the foods to allow for a diverse rainbow of phytonutrients, and as Michael Pollan would say, you know, more of a plant-based diet, you know, eat food, not too much, mostly plants, that is going to help to feed and bring balance back to the gut microflora. Now, some people will be so out of balance that they'll need additional support. They'll need digestive enzymes. They'll need things that help with the leakiness or permeability. Or they may have parasites or such a significant overgrowth that they need antimicrobial herbs like oregano oil or an antiparasitic or an antibiotic. I'm not against any of those things. I'm just for their appropriate use in a measured way. So with yogurts are a great source of being able to help introduce good bacteria into the system. But things like yogurt and probiotics are not going to stick around. They're transient visitors. They're tourists in the gastrointestinal tract who come through, and as tourists, they can have an impact on the environment that's going on there, and they can have a beneficial impact on the environment, but they don't stick around. And so in the evolution of my own approach on this is that in, you know, 10, 12, 15 years ago, I used more probiotics at higher doses. Probiotics can be helpful, specific probiotics for specific diseases. So there's a specific kind of probiotic that we know works well for IBS, Bifidobacter infantis 35624, and there's a specific array of 8 different strains of bacteria that work at 3.6 trillion colony-forming units, fully a third of the gut microbiome on a daily basis to help with ulcerative colitis, a pretty severe disease. But probiotics are used as therapeutic interventions, and I try to move now towards using foods and yogurts and fermented foods as the way to be able to bring balance back to the system in a more natural way. Mm-hmm. Does that help?
That's super helpful. That's super helpful. I think, you know, with many of these questions, it's the start of a conversation. Of course, we're not going to heal that person's gut inside of 1 hour. But you raised such an important point that I want to circle back to, which is you were talking about reserve. And I also believe that one of the key differences between Western medicine or whatever you want to call it, you know, what you and I learned through our training versus the way that we practice now is the way that we look at organ reserve. And for our listeners, what I'm talking about here is the capacity of an organ, such as your liver or your small intestine or your gallbladder, to function beyond its baseline needs. So I wonder, Patrick, if we could come back to organ reserve. How do you start to look at or detangle organ reserve when it comes to, say, a 44-year-old woman who's sitting in front of you across from your desk and telling you her story? How do you start to look at organ reserve and sort of figure out, okay, I'm concerned about this. These are some of the tests that I want to do. Here's some of the questions I want to ask.
Well, I think the first the first way to assess that is just to listen to that internal knowing, because when you're, you know, it's happened to both of us. You're sitting across from a 44-year-old woman, you know, and makeup aside, and you say, wow, you're 44, and you feel like the person looks like they're 28 and vibrant and they're glowing. And we've sat next to 44-year-old people who are like, wow, you must have had a really hard 44 years because you look a lot older than that. And so that's going to be your first sense of what's going on. Now, to kind of put on, if you will, kind of a scientific brainiac hat, you know, there's new testing, you know, developed by Elizabeth Blackburn and received the Nobel Prize in 2009 called telomerase testing, which can give us an idea that looks at the changes in the ends of the chromosomes and how long those fragments are that are actually an indication of biological aging. Not chronologic aging at 44, but how old your body is in terms of how you know, sort of that old saying of, you know, have you been rode hard and put up wet? You know, where that's a horse thing, but to say, you know, is this person actually got a biological age? This 44-year-old woman, that's 54. And, you know, in early years, that was thought to be, well, how quaint that I know that. Do I really want to know that information? But now we've actually shown that things like mindfulness-based stress reduction, omega-3 fish oils, you know, changes in diet, all of these things can actually decrease the biologic aging. So we have the ability to reverse it, which you and I know to be true intuitively, but now we've got scientific data to be able to support us in that process. So that's a kind of tool that if someone's looking for a test to say, how am I doing? That's a great test. But then there's also then questionnaires. And so I tend to rely more upon things like something called the SF-12 or the multiple symptom questionnaire that the Institute for Functional Medicine has adopted as ways to be able to get at how are you doing overall? What's the disease and symptom load that you have going on that you're carrying right now? And that's how I use to assess overall vitality, chi, prana, if you will.
Well, I love that you just knit some of those concepts together. I talk quite a bit about Elizabeth Blackburn and loving up your telomeres so that you're not accelerating the aging process. And I also love that within the same sentence you connected it to life force and chi, because I think of telomeres as being very similar to natal chi, you know, that fixed amount of life force that you're born with and you can't supplement. You have to conserve it and use it more slowly. And that brings me back to this side of your work around shamanism and connection and right relationship with our environment. How does that fit in? I know we're kind of moving around into a lot of different territories, but ultimately I sort of see this as part of the bigger whole. So can you tell us about shamanism and connection and relationship to environment? Where does that fit in when you've got this 44-year-old who's sitting in front of you?
Well, I can, you know, just imagine a recent 44-year-old in front of me, you know, who's doing great work in the world, who's teaching and who's depleting herself in the process because she's focused on everybody else. And our body is saying, stop and listen. Stop and take care of yourself. You're doing great work. But in order to be able to continue to do that work, and in fact to be able to do that work with the deepest authenticity, it's important for you to slow down and to be able to listen and do that. So those are, you know, sometimes very difficult conversations to have in a healthcare setting, where it requires trust, it requires a relationship over time. You know, those kinds of conversations, I may not be having the first time I meet someone in the office, but as I get to know them and they reveal more of themselves to me and they trust me in that process, that it is not only my role but my responsibility to ask some of those difficult questions of what is going on. But they have to be, if you will, ready for it. Sometimes there's intuitive insights that you can have as a practitioner that you see, this is what's out of balance with this individual. But if you sort of just kind of push them in that direction, you can actually do harm. So it's about finding the balance, and it's listening to what's happening in the environment. Our emotions are carriers of energy, of knowledge, of wisdom. And by learning how to pay attention, that when I feel grief, when I'm in working with a patient, that may actually be a reflection of the energy of grief that's present for them, that they may or may not be able to bring up. And so naming that and helping them connect to that, and investigating that and seeing how does that energy move, because we tend to be stuck in certain patterns. Some people who are always grieving, some people who are always angry, it's not that the emotional energy is bad, it's just that it needs to move. And so how do we find ways and tools to be able to help do that? So we meet physical problems with physical antidotes, and we meet mental problems with mental antidotes, and we meet spiritual problems with spiritual antidotes and healing. So finding and listening to what is it that this person needs is an important part of our practice as a practitioner. And, you know, frankly, Sarah, it's only in the last year to 2 years that I've been more willing to have the conversation I'm having right now in public. Because it hasn't, it's not something that is, you know, supported by our other medical colleagues and is thought to be kind of woo-woo or frou-frou or not really real. And yet they're all related to each other. So it's important for me as a scientist and as a doctor, you know, to be able to express that, and that includes doing my own work in relationship to it.
Wow. Well, I so appreciate that, Patrick. You know, I think our listeners understood from the first few sentences of your bio how experienced you are, you know, what a leader you are in the field of functional medicine and good medicine. And to hear someone as accomplished as you are talk about these energetic qualities and how you intuit and discern and also collect the objective data with the 44-year-old woman, for instance, who's sitting in front of you, it's so powerful to hear that. And I really appreciate you coming out of the closet. I'm right there with you. I feel like I've been coming out of the closet as well with some of these other healing modalities that I bring to the table. So thank you. Thank you for that. And I want to also say a little more about emotions and how they're connected to the gut. You were just describing how emotions are these carriers of energy, and I think that's such an intriguing concept. And I believe that many of our listeners have a vague notion that their emotions have to do with what's going on with their gut health. You know, maybe some of our listeners know that when they get stressed, they're more likely to have irritable bowel syndrome and have to run to the bathroom and have diarrhea. But I would love to bring in some of these connections between, your friends, your family, your relationships, your microflora, your food. Can you talk a little bit more about emotions and how that shows up in your gut?
Well, there's many aspects to the question. So where it first arises is research that looks at anger increasing bacillus populations in the gut, and fear expressing other changes that lead to imbalance in the gut. We've got some really good data now on the changes in the diversity of the food that people eat as they move from their community to the hospital to short-term care to long-term care, and changes in the diversity of what's happening in the gut microflora. So we know that there is a connection to the diversity of food. We're beginning to look at, well, what about the changes in community and connection that happens as part of that process? Are those emotional changes that occur through that process also part of what leads to the changes in the alteration in the diversity of the microflora? Because it's the diversity that actually gives it the life and vitality, just as we see the diversity of a forest or an ecosystem is really its representation of vitality and health. So what we eat is going to make a difference there. Our emotions are going to make a difference there. And then as we see from, you know, you spoke of Michael Pollan and, you know, sort of the simple aspect of how we eat. Why is it that we have, you know, the French paradox where they're eating cheese and drinking wine, but they're doing it in a slow way where there's parasympathetic activity, they're connecting to friends and family, they're allowing the nutrients to be digested and absorbed, and there's a vastly different quality of their overall health and well-being. And that is an important consideration. So it's our connection to our community. It's our connection to our food. You know, the process of digestion begins when you go out in the garden and you cut the lettuce or the kale or the peel and be produced in the saliva are part of deepening the parasympathetic.
Patrick, for some reason, I think you're breaking up just a little bit. I'm not sure why. It might be the conference line. But I think you just were describing the French paradox, and we heard that really clearly. And then I think you started to talk about cutting some kale from your garden. Do you mind just repeating that one piece?
Sure. Sorry. Sorry, that didn't. I am sitting in the same place looking at my garden right here out the window. And, you know, the salivary amylases begin when you go to pick the kale and the lettuce from the garden. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't happen. That parasympathetic activity that's getting ready for the digestive process to occur doesn't occur even if you're at the organic food store and grabbing the lettuce and the kale to go. You know, it's about connecting to the nature and all of what is given us that allows for the optimized digestion to occur and to optimize the foods that are going to feed the microflora that are inside us. And that's how I bring it back to the connection. That's important. And that's an ideal, and that's not always going to happen. So then recognize, okay, well, I'm not always going to be picking my own food, so I'm going to eat organic food, and I'm going to take time to prepare it and to honor it. And I'm going to sit down, and I'm not going to eat at a desk with a computer or a TV on. I'm going to relate to others. Or if I'm traveling and I'm sitting alone having a meal, how do I use that as an experience of mindful eating to take my time and really be able to enjoy all of the molecules that are there that are feeding me?
I love this. You know, you just connected several really important dots for me, because I think many folks have already, they understand the importance of eating organic kale, for instance. But they haven't really put it together with the mad rush that they have maybe at 5:30 or 6 p.m. to go to Whole Foods and grab some kale and run and get into the fast lane to check out. I think it's so important to kind of go back to that lovely image that you had of cutting some kale and having the enzymes, the salivary amylases, begin to get generated in your mouth as you anticipate the kale and you smell it and you have that aroma of freshly cut kale. So even for our listeners who don't like kale, I think it's so important to kind of look at these pieces and how important they are. I also want to ask you a really practical question because we are not able to keep you very much longer today. As much as I'd love to talk to you for hours and hours, I know you have to go back to seeing your patients. What did you have for breakfast today?
What I had for breakfast today is I got up and I just had some water and some yogurt, some Greek yogurt, and then I actually got up later than I wanted, so I was on a call, and my son, 19-year-old son, came up, and he made a green smoothie with kale and chard and a little bit of pineapple, frozen pineapple and frozen apple, and put some more yogurt in that and a little bit of whey protein.
Nice.
That was my breakfast drink from my 19-year-old son, who's a champion juice maker in our Vitamix.
Oh, fantastic. So you were able to alkalinize, you had a nutrigenomic wake-up call to your DNA and your microflora this morning. I love that. And in these last few moments together, I just wanted to ask, what are you excited about? What is driving you right now? And then I want to finish just by asking how people can learn more about you and your work. So first, what excites you? What's driving you right now?
Yeah, docere, to teach. I love to teach, and I'm really interested now in helping to raise and train other teachers to go out there into the world to be able to bring these ideas into medical schools and residencies and family doctors and doctors around the world of a systems approach, to working to help support the individual, not to be able to suppress symptoms. I feel like we're right at the cusp of a great opportunity, and it's beginning to happen. We've been teaching in, this week I'll leave for, Oslo, Geneva, Johannesburg, Cape Town, and we've taught in Beijing and in India, and we'll be in Brazil, and it's just amazing what's happening with people around the world wanting to learn this approach to healing.
Well, you're right. I know that everyone who's listening today really understands why this is so wildly popular, because you are describing the kind of medicine that everyone wants. And I really appreciate the service that you provide to the world. Now, how can people learn more? Where can they get more information about what you've described to us so beautifully today?
Well, there's sort of three different aspects. So at the personal level, our clinic is called Family to Family, as you mentioned, that my wife and I started 15 years ago. There's the Institute for Functional Medicine, and that website, functionalmedicine.org or .com. I gotta stop for a moment and think and look it up.
It's .org,
there it is. I see it there. I always get confused. And then actually, if people are interested in the more shamanic realm of things, we've got a retreat center up in the Catskills, and we've got a gathering called Ancient Wisdom Rising, which is bringing teachers from the Onondaga, Mohawk, West African, Dagara, Tibetan, Bon, traditions, all to be able to gather together in the Catskills and teach and learn of their ancient traditions, ancientwisdomrising.com.
Love that. And what I'll do for our listeners is I'll include that in an email that I send that has the recording attached. So thank you so much, Patrick. I just feel so honored to have this time with you. I feel like my gut flora is better just listening to you. Is that possible?
It is, emotionally. And I'm so, so thankful of the work that you're doing out in the world to continue to raise these ideas and continue the conversation and allow individuals to know that there is a healing that is possible. And thank you so much for your work, Sarah.
Thank you, Patrick. So everyone, please learn more at the websites that Patrick mentioned. I will reinforce them with an email that I send to you. This is Dr. Sarah Gottfried, author of the New York Times bestselling book, The Hormone Cure. You can find me at sarahgottfriedmd.com. Thanks, everyone. We will see you next time.
Bye.